We're back, JUCO Products, CJ Pierce and Dom Tioli with a special guest here today. I know Dom's pretty excited about him. I'm excited as well. Welcome to the show, Joe Licata. Joe is a former high school quarterback at Williamsville South. Played there from 2012 to 2015. Then went on to play for the UB Bulls. Led the team to an 8-5 record in 2013 and to the famous Idaho Potato Bowl. The school's only their second appearance in school history. In 2014, Licata posted one of the finest passing seasons in Buffalo school history, throwing for 2,647 yards and a school single season record of 29 passing touchdowns. The 2015 saw Joe wrap up his college career, becoming the all-time career leader in passing yards and touchdowns. Joe signed with the Buffalo Bills after his UB playing career and made his NFL debut with the Bengals. He is now the athletic director and head football coach at Bishop Tyman High School and is working towards his master's in physical education at Kinesis College. Welcome to the show, Joe.
Thanks, it's awesome to have you. Guys.
Dom, what do you got, Dom? You got anything else to juice Joe up a little bit?
Joe's a fun guy, a big clinician of physical activity over here, so...
All right. Well, I got a couple of questions before we even get too far into it. What was it like playing Division I football, Joe? How big of a step was it from playing at Williamsville, and how much did you miss playing?
It was an awesome experience. I had a few options coming out of high school. I could have gone to Akron, Syracuse, or North Carolina, and I chose to stay home and play in front of my family and friends at UB. And that was a great experience. It was a great decision for me. I got to make a lot of lifelong friends, made a lot of connections. It was just an awesome experience, you know, being able to represent your city, your hometown on a national scale is, you know, everyone's dream come true, essentially.
I haven't ever talked to a Division I football player. Well, I mean, I shouldn't say that. I talked to a couple Division I football players, but nobody who's played in the NFL. So did you spend some time with the Buffalo Bills and the Cincinnati Bengals. Did you get any playing time in preseason or anything?
Yeah, I played three preseason games for the Bengals. That was a really cool experience. I made a lot of friends. I was pretty close with Dalton and pretty close with McCarron at the time. And it was an awesome experience, you know, getting to – learn an NFL playbook, getting to see how training camp went, getting to see the business side of things. It was a really cool experience.
Joe,
do you stay in contact with any of those guys?
I talked to a couple of them here and there. Alex Erickson, still one of my buddies. He plays receiver for him. He returns punts for him. He was the man. I still talk to those guys every once in a while.
Joey, talk about how your experience in the NFL has translated into becoming a high school football coach.
Yeah, I learned a lot from every level that I was at as a player and as a quarterback and as a leader. I learned a lot from my high school football coach, Krasanski. He taught me a lot about how to care for people and how much that matters. And when you're coaching them, if you care about the kids, then the kids care about the game, and that's kind of what translates to them wanting to be great in football. So I learned that from Krasanski. I learned a lot from my college coaches. Don Patterson was my quarterback's coach. He had a great outlook on the game, about keeping things simple. He was awesome. Learned a ton from him and Alex Wood. And then when I got to the NFL, I learned a lot about how to manage people, how not to manage people, how to talk to certain different people from different backgrounds. You know, you get into an NFL locker room, there's 100 different backgrounds. I mean, there's people from high-end neighborhoods, people from that didn't come from any money, but now they have millions of dollars. So you learn about how to, like, talk to different people at each different level that I was at. It's pretty cool.
Awesome. So, you know, just going back to the high school football a little bit, I know you're the head coach at Bishop Tyman. I coach football myself in the high school level. I work with the quarterbacks and DBs at my high school that I graduated from. So what's your thoughts on the high school football with this COVID-19 going on? Do you think there's going to be a season? When will we see Everything's starting to go back to normal. I just want to get your thoughts
on
that.
Well, you know, I don't think anybody knows. So, you know, we could sit here, we could speculate and say that we think it'll be back by June. You know, I hope it's figured out within the next couple of weeks. That way we can actually get a spring season in, somewhat of a modified spring season. You know, we have talks about having a couple, you know, for baseball specifically, having a couple doubleheaders, play 4 straight days of doubleheaders and then get right into some type of playoffs or something along those lines. Just for these high school kids, it's such an important experience that to have it taken away from them is really sad. And obviously there's bigger issues, you know, people's health obviously is the biggest issue, but you know, for a 17, 18 year old kid to lose out on that experience, it's just sad. It's sad for them. So, I hope we can get it figured out to salvage some of the spring season, although I don't think it's really possible, but, I don't know. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see.
What's your thoughts, Don? I think it's a little different with the NFL because of the money aspect. You know, I feel like you could play football in the NFL starting in November because you can play football year round. It's different with high school football because of the time periods, the time frames. So you would have to start it in August and then play through November, and then that would lead into basketball season. Like it would be very difficult to overlap because of, you know, different guys playing different sports and stuff like that. You know what I mean?
I don't even know if it's all gonna depend on what the governor says, what the president says. I mean, this stuff's all out of our hands. I mean, I'm hoping everything's back to normal by September 1st. I mean, that's kind of the day that's been stuck in my head.
Well, like, I'm just really kind of interested to see if we're even gonna go back to school on time with all this stuff going on. Because it's going to be very difficult. I think New York State's going to be one of the last states to really open up because of what's going on downstate. So it's just going to be very interesting to see what's going to happen in regards to that.
Well, even if let's say everything was okayed for, let's say, May 1st. It's going to take two full calendar years for the public anxiety levels to be okay. Like, sports games aren't going to sell out anymore. Like, people aren't going to get into big crowds, even if it was okayed by May 1st. Just the public anxiety is still going to be super high. So I don't foresee this returning to quote unquote normal. I don't think there is a normal anymore.
No, I think handshaking, no. That's a thing of the past.
Yeah, that's done. We're going to be doing elbow touches, toe touches, some weird stuff. I don't know. Who knows?
We're going to be saluting each other.
Yeah.
Well, we talked about this yesterday, Dom, and I said this to you last week about the stadiums going back to normal and professional football games, that especially this season, and, you know, not just football. It'll be basketball, hockey, all major sports. You're going to see social distancing rules put in place. I mean, you might not see people. There will never be a full stadium again. At least, I shouldn't say again, but at least
within
for this year,
years,
I think
yeah.
You'll see, you know, yeah, there'll be seats. Every other seat will be available, or every two seats will be available. You'll have social distancing rules while you're waiting in line to get a beer at a Bills game or whatever it is. Yeah, Joe, you're absolutely right. There is no normal anymore. We're going to have to find our new normal. So.
And like I was saying yesterday, I think, you know, when it comes to like the Sabres, I don't think we really have to worry about social distancing when it comes to them, because it's going to be 50% full anyways. So,
yeah, that's Buffalo. That's Buffalo sports until McDermott and them got there. You got the Sabres who, I mean, for the last, what, Dom, the last 8 or 9 years, struggling, trying to find their identity, get back to the glory days of the mid-2000s, the 2005 teams, the 2006 team. And then the Buffalo Bills, obviously, they're on the come up. They got, you know, hopefully a franchise quarterback now. And we got a great head coach. And so I think that they're heading in the right direction. But anyway, back now that we're talking about the NFL, Dom tells me you're a pretty big Tom Brady fan, Joe. I just want to get your thoughts on t- Tom Brady taking his talents to Tampa Bay and how you see that playing out.
I'm a huge Tom Brady fan. I get a lot of crap for it from every Buffalo person, but I just respect his greatness and his moxie, and I could ramble on and on, but I'm not going to because Dom will get upset. But I think it's interesting that he chose Tampa. I listened to him on Howard Stern the other day. If you haven't listened to it, it's an awesome interview. It's a 2-hour interview. He answers everything. It's incredible. But he talked about what he prioritized, and one of them was actually playing in the warm weather, which I thought was pretty interesting for him. Playing in warm weather was one of his priorities. The roster was another priority, and I think that them having Godwin and Mike Evans was huge for him. And then coaching was another one too. So he's going to play for Bruce Arians, who's had a ton of success with quarterbacks. So I think it's an interesting choice. I'm really excited to see Tampa versus New Orleans on the first primetime game, whatever it is. But those are my two favorite guys of this era.
I love it in that Howard Stern interview when Howard Stern asked Brady, because Brady's living in Jeter's house. Yeah. He's renting from him. And Howard Stern said if your washing machine breaks, does Jeter come in and fix it for you? I thought that was hilarious.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. And that's just like the power of sports too, and the power of being famous. You know, the fact that Jeter and Brady are friends is pretty cool to me, especially with him being a Yankee and Brady being the face of a Boston franchise for so long. But that stuff is cool. I like those stories.
Oh, no doubt.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Well, and looking at Tampa Bay's roster, I mean, thinking about it early on, I don't think anyone really thought Tampa Bay was a player. But again, this was something we talked about yesterday, Dom, is that team's loaded. I mean, they have all the offensive weapons, but on the defensive side of the ball, they have Ndamukong Suh, they have Jason Pierre-Paul, Devin White,
Barrett,
Lavonte David, who I think is one of the most underrated players in the league. Yeah, Shaq Barrett. They got a really talented defense who went from 30th in the NFL to 5th in one season under Todd Bowles. So, looking at it now, it really does make sense. And it's a great coach. I mean, you can't deny Bruce Arians' greatness.
Yeah, it's just essentially if you take away Jameis's 30 interceptions from last year, that team is talking about winning 3 or 4 more games. And that's exactly what Brady's –
Do we lose you there, Joe?
Yeah, I'm here.
I think we might have lost Joe.
Joe's back.
Oh, there he is. No big deal. No big deal. We can take care of that. But anyway, no, Joe was just saying, it does make sense that Tampa Bay team. They were 7-9 last year. 7-9 last year with a quarterback that threw 30 touchdowns and 30 interceptions. You put Tom Brady in there, that team probably goes 11-5.
That's what I'm saying. You take away those 30 interceptions, and that team's in a different spot than they were. He's going to be 43, but he's still shown that he could play at a pretty high level. And it's just going to be weird to see him in that pewter and that red jersey, which I have on the way, by the way.
If you take a look at one of Brady's main problems last year in New England, it was his offensive line. His offensive line was really not that great. He wasn't getting the amount of time that he's had in the past. And if you take a look at the Buccaneers' offensive line, it's kind of similar in the fact that he's really not going to get the amount of time that he really needs to. But I mean, he gets rid of the ball quickly anyways, but he's going to take
shots. I don't know. We'll see. Ali Marpet is starting for them at guard. He's a Hobart guy. So that's going to be cool to see him. You know, he's a captain, a guy from Hobart walking out for captains with the great Tom Brady. That's going to be really cool to see. Arians does a pretty decent job. He actually throws the ball. He likes to call plays downfield a little bit more than Josh McDaniels does, but it's going to be interesting to see Brady's input on the offense, because I think that he's going to have a little bit more more to do with game planning than he ever has, which is probably going to be beneficial for the Bucks, obviously. So that'll be interesting. I think he's going to be doing a little bit of play calling.
Oh, I would agree.
Oh, I agree. Yeah, I agree with that. Well, you think about their quarterbacks coach, Clyde Christensen. He was the QB coach and offense coordinator, I believe, for a little bit for Peyton Manning in Indianapolis. And he mentions a time when Peyton leaves and goes to Denver and basically took his entire playbook with him and put his own offense in Denver. And a lot of people think that they might do a similar thing with Tom Brady, is let him come in and put his own spin on the offense. I don't think it's going to be a Bruce Arians offense down there in Tampa Bay this year. I think it's going to be.
I think you're right. But I think with this whole coronavirus, I think it's going to be a little bit of both. I mean, there has to be some type of comfortability from those guys. I bet you Brady's on Skype freaking explaining everything to his guys right now. You know, he's probably zooming everyone and just explaining what they call things and how he wants certain depth in certain routes. So I think that it's going to be a little bit of both, and it's going to be interesting because without OTAs right now, they're going to be a little bit behind.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I think it's crazy to think that Brady's going to go in there and throw his own offense in there, because Bruce Arians and Clyde Christensen, that whole coaching group's only been there for a year. Guys are still learning that offense. They're not going to throw something brand new on all of these guys like Godwin and Ronald Jones and everybody. They're not going to do that. They're going to continue doing what they're doing and let Brady throw his own little
twist. I think Brady right now, he's in like the testing out process. He's talking to his guys, feeling them out, and seeing if, you know, they're really, really in it to win it at this point. And if they're not, he's going to want to get rid of them, and they're going to find somebody else that will replace him, that has the same mindset that he's dealt with for 20 years in New England.
Well, did you guys hear the rumor about Gronkowski coming back?
I heard about it, yeah.
Dom, are you pretty upset about that?
Yeah, I heard about that, yeah.
You know what? I just don't want to see him in a New England jersey. I've just had enough of that garbage for the past, 20 years.
My thought about this whole thing is, though, if you're a Bills fan, this is, like, the Patriots being so great is the perfect experience or the perfect excuse for the Bills being so bad for so long. Like they had the excuse to say, oh, the best team of all time, the best quarterback of all time, the best coach of all time, tight end of all time. They were all in our division for the last 20 years. So our mediocre decision-making and teams, that's our excuse. So if I'm a Bills fan, I'm like, all right, you know what? Hey, they're the greatest ever. You know, that's why we weren't winning. Okay.
Yeah, that is a Buffalo mediocre excuse for sure. We're very used to comments like that, Joe.
No, I'm trying to help you out. I'm trying to give you an excuse here. Yeah, I'm helping.
He's
you
helping
out.
Your case, CJ, Tom. Yeah, he's helping your case. I'm not. I'm a Steelers fan. I just grew up in a house where my dad was a Steelers fan. So, but my grandfather is friends with Terry Pegula. So I do root for the Bills. Right. I do root for the Bills a little bit.
I'm a football.
What about
fan.
You?
So I grew up a Bills fan. I had season tickets. Me and my dad used to go to games. That was an awesome experience. But then as soon as I graduated college, I was kind of going through the process myself and just was like, all right, I'm going to remove all fandom. And so I just, after that, I kind of just wanted to watch good football. So I've always really just followed quarterbacks anyways and rooted for the Bills. And right now, you know, I'll root for them. I want the Bills to do well, but I'm not going to lose sleep over a trade that they made or, you know, get really upset about a loss that they had. I mean, I'm kind of past that point in my life, but I'll definitely root for them and I want them to do well. But I'm not going to lose sleep over it.
So what's your – you being a quarterback guy, Joe, what's your thoughts
on
Josh Allen?
He's got a lot of tools. he does a lot of good things. I think that football in general is the sport that matters the most with coaching. And when Dable simplifies things for him, and he has downfield reads that are off of one or two players, Josh Allen's really good, like really good. And but when he doesn't and he puts a lot on his plate, yeah, which you kind of saw at the beginning of last season, Allen struggled. And then towards the end of the season, everything was more simple. Everything was off of play action or off of a zone read concepts. Whenever it was like that, Allen was awesome. That's his wheelhouse. That's what his game is. So whenever Dable calls plays along those lines and keeps everything simple for him, Allen's really good.
I was saying this yesterday, CJ. I think that Allen's way better when he's scrambling out in the pocket than he is standing straight in the pocket. I think he's better when he's moving his feet. He's a more mobile quarterback at this point of his career. He just needs to learn. He just needs to gain more accuracy, and I think over time that's happening. He made a huge jump from his first year to last year, in my opinion. What do you think, Joe?
And again, I agree with what you're saying. He's great. He's good on the run. He's a good playmaker in general. But I just think that when everything's in front of him and it's just off of one player, or if it's a quick 1 to 2 to 3 read, he's really good at that stuff. But when you ask him to change the protection, when you ask him to check into different plays, that's a lot. That's a lot to ask of somebody who's only in his second year last year. And you saw that the first couple games, and he really did struggle if you go back and watch the film.
Yeah.
But all the good throws that he made were essentially off of play action or just simple 1 to 2 to 3 reads. And he's really good at that stuff, and he's really talented, and he can make all those throws when he knows what's going on.
And if I recall, back in like 2001, Brady kind of struggled with that kind of stuff too. It took him a couple of years to really, you know, implement it with, you know, the Belichick.
Yeah,
offense.
I mean the game is so fast, and there's so many things. I mean, you can run what you consider a pro offense in college, but there's nothing like a professional offense other than professional offenses. I mean, there's so many checks. There's so many things you need to know. There's 19 tags in one play call. It's insane. So to have to learn all that stuff and then on top of that, change of protection or know what a hot route is. And certain, there's a lot of stuff that goes through your head in that, you know, 25-second play clock. So to put all that on a 24-year-old quarterback who's only in his second year running a huddled offense, I mean, that's a lot to ask.
Definitely.
There's a lot of quarterbacks like that that struggle with that early on in their careers. Me being a Steelers fan, I think back to early Ben Roethlisberger, his first couple of years. I mean, that was a big reason why we went 15-1 in the regular season, and then Ben really struggled in the playoffs that year. He had a tough game against the Jets, and then we got blown out by the Patriots in the AFC Championship game. And then even you think back to the Super Bowl the next year against the Seahawks, he was very successful early on and on, you know, play action or getting outside the pocket, making something happen. But when he had to sit there in the pocket and go through the progressions, he did struggle. And it's something that he picked up later on in his career. So, I mean, if Josh Allen's, you know, if there's anything to think about, he could think about quarterbacks like that, that he has the potential to grow into. But, you know, he's still got he's got a long ways to go. Still.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And like I said, I mean, coaching matters so much. If he has a guy that's going to be there for 4 years with him, that he could really learn the offense and start to know it like the back of his hand, I mean, he's going to be in a lot better shape than if he was changing offensive coordinators every year.
Yeah, I want to touch on this topic real fast. Joe, I know you have some opinions about your buddy Chad Kelly, but with Phillip Rivers now at Indianapolis, which I think he's only there for a year, do you think they're grooming Chad to be the starter?
I don't know. Chad's got a ton of ability. He did some good things in the preseason last year. And I think he's healthy now. So it'll be interesting to see. I don't know. I think Rivers will be the guy there for probably a year or two. And then they're going to look to go younger, which it could be Chad.
Yeah, I think Brissett's time there is over with. I just don't think he reminds me of a Tyrod Taylor type.
Yeah, he's more of a Brian Hoyer type, I think, who's just going to be a good. Yeah, Hoyer. I mean, that's who I see. No.
There's nothing wrong with Brian Hoyer. I mean, there's nothing wrong with Brian Hoare's played a lot of years in the NFL.
He's made a lot of money.
So I understand.
Yeah, like I was saying yesterday, you know, there's been some really good preseason quarterbacks like Nate Peterman. Yeah, he's probably the best preseason quarterback of all time in the National Football
League.
Don't hate
on my boy, Nate. Nate's a good dude.
Oh, he's an excellent guy, but, you know, yeah, well, like I said, he was a really good preseason quarterback and kind of struggled in the regular season whenever he got the opportunity. Not saying all those interceptions were his fault. In his first game against the Chargers, there was at least three interceptions that were not his fault.
Yeah, no, Nate was a hard worker. Nate is a hard worker, and he's an awesome dude, and he studies his butt off. So I always will root for Nate because he's a good guy.
Well, I think we're going to pivot here, guys. What do you think about talking about a little baseball?
Interested.
You're interested. All right, let's hear it. So I'm thinking about – let's talk about the Houston Astros. And obviously before this whole COVID-19 bullshit, you had the Houston Astros had some issues. They're cheaters. There's no other way to put it. They're cheaters. They had the issues with stealing signs and banging garbage cans and Jose Altuve wearing – a buzzer system and, you know, all these theories. But, you know, there was something obviously there. They've been penalized by Major League
Baseball. Have they been penalized by Major League Baseball, though?
Now you got to think back. That brings up a good point, Joe. No, they haven't been. The fact that they're allowing some of these guys, some of the ringleaders, all they did is punish the coaches. And they punished a guy who was a player and then was a coach and got his ass fired, Carlos Beltran. So I agree with you. No, I don't think they have been.
There's more punishment. I don't think they have been punished on the Mets than there have been on the Astros.
I think it's kind of a joke. I mean, just suspending AJ Hinch for a year, or for 2 years. It's only going to be a year because who knows if the season's going to happen and they're honoring this year's suspensions. That's just not enough. Him and the general manager. Like, there was so much other stuff going on. The players need to be penalized, you know, because they could have stopped it too.
The players should be penalized. It bothers me that the term, banned for life. Like Pete Rose is banned from baseball. The fact that these guys did something that's worse than what Pete Rose did, in my opinion, and they got a 1 year suspension. Now, you can argue that they're never going to get a job again anyway, so essentially they are banned for life. But that term is still not on their resume, which it should be. Banned for life. Banned from baseball.
And you want to know why it's worse than Pete Rose's gambling? It's just because, you know, major league hitters, they can hit 97-mile-an-hour fastballs when they know it's coming. They can hit they can lay off nasty sliders in the dirt when they know it's coming. You know, that to me is just like having batting practice. You know, me and CJ were decent D3 baseball players, but I don't think if we knew a 97-mile-an-hour fastball was coming, we probably couldn't hit it. But these guys, it's batting practice to them.
Right. No, it's the worst sports scandal in the last 30 years. It has to be.
I think it's worse than Pete Rose for the fact that Pete Rose, he was betting on games, but he was betting on himself. These guys, they were using advantages to benefit themselves that were, you know, affecting other teams and other players and other organizations and how the outcome of games were played. Pete Rose was betting on himself. He knew he was going to win. He knew that he had it in him to help his team win, and so he bet on himself. And obviously that's you can't do that and whatnot. But really, I mean, he's the greatest pure hitter of all time, and he's never gonna – I mean, I guess you never say never, but he probably will never be in the Hall of Fame, which is absolutely a shame.
He won't make the Hall of Fame while he's alive. They might put him in when he dies, but it's a shame because he's not going to be put in while he's still alive.
You know what?
That's a shame. And the guy – he over 4,000 career hits is unbelievable.
Right, that is crazy. But if he was a little bit more PR-friendly, I guess, I think he would have been in by now. But the fact that he's a little bit arrogant about it and just, I bet on he signs baseball saying, I bet on baseball, Pete Rose.
He really does.
Yep. Yeah, he is. Yeah, he is a He's a little bit of a cuck, but yeah, no, but you're absolutely right. That's making a big difference because he blames Major League Baseball for the fact that he's not in the Hall of Fame. In reality,
right, it's your own fault. If he just kind of owned up to it and just said, I made a mistake, you know, he doesn't even admit that he made mistakes, I don't really think. So, you know, but that.
So now would that be. Oh, go ahead.
I mean, we're getting off the point that the Astros cheated. I mean, they cheated. But what Pete Rose did was wrong, and it was morally wrong, but. And you can argue that it subconsciously did change outcomes of games, but the Astros directly changed outcomes of games. They changed outcomes of series going forward. I mean, if you look at batting averages for the Astros, they're going to be higher than a batting average for some free agent from the Brewers, let's say. And now if you're going to pay one of those two guys, you're going to pay the guy with the higher batting average from the Astros, which just isn't fair.
I mean –
Well, they really ruin people. They ruin lives. I mean, you really think about who's that Blue Jays pitcher? One out pitches, and he's into the majors since. And I actually don't even think he's playing in the minors anymore.
Who was that guy?
Did you guys see that story?
No, who was that guy?
Mike Bolsinger.
Oh, Bolsinger.
Mike Bolsinger.
Okay, Bolsinger.
Yes, Mike Bolsinger. He threw. Go ahead, Dom.
I think he actually played for the Astros. I got to look that up.
It says right here. I'm looking at it right now. It says he pitched technically a third of an inning. He got one out. He threw a third of an inning, threw 29 pitches. He gave up four runs, and they counted how many times the garbage can was hit during his third of an inning, and it was hit 12 times. They went back and looked at the tape. It hit 12 times, and he's actually suing the Houston Astros for lost wages.
I mean, yeah, and you take a look at, you know, it's been going on since 2017. You know, the Yankees have played against the Astros twice in the last 3 years in the ALCS, and I think they have the absolute right to be very unhappy with what transpired. And the Dodgers, they took a World Series away from the Dodgers. It's unfathomable to think about.
Yeah, it's just sad on so many levels.
Yeah. Now, do you guys think that because of this COVID-19 issue, do you think that this is kind of, you know, going to get overlooked a little bit when baseball does start up again, or is it's going to be the same, you know, every baseball or every stadium that they walk into, they're going to be fans hating on them. There's going to be fans booing them from inning one to the last pitch of the game. Or do you think that because of this COVID-19 that's going to die off?
I think they might be the luckiest bastards in the world right now, honestly.
I think they're super lucky. It's definitely going to die down a little bit, but people will still always boo them. I mean, if I go up to Toronto to watch the Astros play in 3 years, I'm going to still boo them. I mean, I don't think that's ever going to stop officially, but it's definitely going to die down a little bit.
Like, I think diehard baseball fans, like the three of us, or I mean, Joe, you're a baseball fan. You would say, right? Yeah, like people that know the game understand how brutally terrible this was for the game, for people's lives and stuff like that. So people that know the game are going
to
be very.
I was talking to my friend who was playing the show on PlayStation the other day, and he's in a season. He's a Mets fan, and. He said, yeah, you know, we opened up the season with the Astros, so I beamed out Altuve every time he came up to the plate. So even in video games, those guys are still getting it. So I guess that's fair.
And like Correa.
Oh, that's absolutely
Correa
fair.
Correa had that interview during spring training, bad-mouthing Kershaw, or was it Kershaw? That he was bad mouthing CJ. Do you remember?
Yeah. Well, he had
it was Bellinger. It was Bellinger.
Bellinger, and there was someone else too that they went at. I can't remember. Oh, that former player who's
Fiers.
On the age now. That
Mike
kind of ran him out. Was it Mike Fiers? Mike Fiers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I.
But yeah, what was the exchange? What was that exchange between Bellinger and Correa?
Bellinger just said. you know, they took a ring right off my finger. And Correa came back and said, well, Bellinger hit like 105 in the World Series. He said, maybe if you would have played a little bit better, you would have won. Like, I just don't know how you could come back and make that statement. Like, some Astros fans that I know personally, they said, you know, the Yankees, that they knew that Lance McCullers was throwing 12 straight curveballs and they still couldn't hit it. And I said, you know what? Yeah, but Houston knew that Chapman was throwing a slider there to Altuve, and he smoked that ball. Granted, Chapman hung that slider terribly, but, you know, it's still a tough pitch to hit, and hit it that far from a guy that's 5'4", you know? So.
Absolutely. Well, and, you know, thinking about that, the thing about the scandal. Now, Dom, we touched on this a couple podcasts ago, but that whole situation when Altuve hits the walk-off to send him to the World Series and he's holding his jersey shut and runs into the dugout as soon as the celebration's over. When you were watching that live, I don't know if you guys stayed up to watch it, but I watched all, you know, I watched every pitch of that game. Did you think in that moment, did you think anything like, wow, what is going on here? I've never seen that before. Or did you guys
I thought it was funny because I remember, you know, when I played, like if somebody would hit a home run and it was a big home run, we'd all come out to home plate and they'd all like be holding their helmets and holding their jerseys because everyone would just attack them. So I honestly didn't think anything of it in the moment.
At the time, I kind of just threw my shoe at the television and turned it off.
Yankees fan over there.
Yankees fan. So I was watching it. I was watching it, and I watched him hold the jersey, thought nothing. I didn't think anything of that. But then he sprinted. Camera shows him sprinting in the locker room. And then he comes back out without his jersey on. And he's just wearing like an undershirt or his jersey's wide open. I can't exactly remember what it was. I thought it was strange. And I said something. I can't remember if I said it to you, Dom, or if I said it to somebody else. I thought that was a little strange. But no, I didn't think of anything to that extent.
And then Altuve comes out with tattoo, you know, he had a bad tattoo that he didn't want to show off.
A bad tattoo.
Like, are you serious? like, in what right mind would anybody think that's a logical explanation for why he wouldn't want to have anybody rip his shirt off?
Gotta come
like,
up with
are
something.
You kidding me? I guess so. People, I got.
Yeah, I mean they had.
No, I guess there's stupid people in this society. So.
Yeah. Well, I mean we're into this episode pretty deep, fellas. I think we're gonna get ready to sign off here soon. You know, but right before we get to go, though, I'm taking a look at your Bishop time and schedule here, Joe, from 2018. And I thought I was right if I knew the school that I was thinking of. But we actually had two opponents on our schedule that were the same as you that year. And Bishop Kearney
and had that right back. I think he's going to UConn. He's a heck of a football player.
Yes.
He's a Division I kid.
Yep.
And then yeah. Alexander was really good. They had beaten a team like 100-0 or something like that. It was insane.
Yeah, week one. So we played them week four. We played them their homecoming. Week one, they played Geneseo, I believe it was.
Yeah,
somebody
it was
like that.
Crazy.
They beat them 81-0. And then we went there at their homecoming, and they hung 50 on us in the first half. They were solid that year. They were solid.
Yeah. So before we sign off, we might as well talk a little about Senior Martin football then.
All right.
So,
let's talk.
Joe and Timon, they won the Monsignor Martin Class B championship this year. So that's a good honor
it was
for
awesome.
You guys,
it was a great
Joe.
Congratulations!
And you guys
that.
Went through tons of adversity to end up winning that title.
We lost a player preseason in the summer going into last year. He was murdered, Paul Humphrey. So he wore number 2 for us. So our motto the whole season was together, and we let a different kid wear number 2 each week to honor Paul. That was a really cool thing, and you know our we had number two on the side of our helmets, and it's kind of our rallying cry the whole season was together, and it ended up the kid who wore number two in the championship, Makari Inabanad, ended up scoring a few touchdowns, and he won the MVP of the game, which was really a special moment.
Now that's just that's awesome. Wow. You know, tough situation, but you guys rallied.
Yeah, that's what sports is about. You know, it gives it's got a certain healing power, and our kids really just rallied around football because they didn't know what else to do. You know, so that was really cool.
So,
yeah, that's a great story.
So looking forward to this season, if we're fortunate enough to have a season, how does the Monsignor Martin play out?
Well, the quarterback from St. Francis, Ritz, is probably the best quarterback around. He's coming back. Jimmy Scott from St. Joe's actually just transferred into Franny's. So I think Franny's, I guess, would probably be the favorite coming back. Canisius won it last year and had an awesome season. Tyler Baker plays quarterback for them. He did a great job. He was only a sophomore. He'll be a junior. And then St. Joe's with Coach Corona coming in. He's a new coach from downstate that they're excited about getting him in the program. So that's the large schools. The small schools, us, O'Hara, St. Mary's. St. Mary's, Jaquan Manuel, their running back. I mean, he's a stud. He ran for like 200 yards on us in the championship game. He's a heck of a football player. We returned some talent. Kyle Orr, receiver, our quarterback, Jaden Jennings, is back. So we've got some players. O'Hara's got some studs, some young players from last year. So it should be a really competitive league, and should be a good season, just kind of like it was last year.
Do you have Canisius on your schedule? It's tough. Always tough going against the teams that you know, in my opinion, recruit when they really shouldn't be.
Well, I'm. If you got anything else,
coming from St. Joe's, you know, I feel like I have a right to say that.
Well, I'm gonna wrap things up here, fellas. Joe, we, in the words of Pat McAfee, we appreciate the hell out of you for coming on to the podcast with us.
Awesome, I appreciate it.
We hope to have you on again soon.
Stay safe.
Thanks, Joe.
All right, thanks, Joe. All right, Dom, I think we'll sign off here too. You know, that was a great talk. He's a hell of a guy. It was a great conversation.
Yeah, it was awesome to have him on. Maybe we'll get him on some other time.
Yeah, I would love to. It's always cool when you can talk to a guy who played Division I football and then played a little time in the NFL, got to spend some time with some really quality quarterbacks and Andy Dalton and A.J. McCarron, and got to know some studs. So, you know, another shout out to Joe Licata, and we really appreciate him coming on. Me and Dom will sign off here. JUCO Products, we'll be back again soon, and thank you for listening.
Yeah,
everybody.
All have a nice social distancing. Make sure you do some social distancing.